Did Frodo nearly kill the Witch King? Yes, I know that some combination of Eowyn and Merry did in the Battle of the Pelennor Fields, but were we scant inches from Frodo doing it much, much earlier in the story? Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we dive deep into the Lord of the Rings and Tolkien's wider legendarium, as well as A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. Welcome. We all know how the Witch King actually finally died. Merry stabbed him from behind with a magic sword, and Eowyn landed the killing blow. I did a video on it, setting out the exact mechanics if you're interested. One thing that is very clear from that, though, is that Merry's blade was crucial. Here's what Tolkien wrote about it in The Lord of the Rings. He actually focuses more on that than he does Eowyn, as the sword consumed itself, having fulfilled its purpose. So passed the Sword of the Barrowdowns, work of Western Ess. But glad would he have been to know its fate, who wrought it slowly long ago in the North Kingdom, when the Dúnedain were young, and chief among their foes was the dread realm of Angmar and its sorcerer king. No other blade, not though mightier hands had wielded it, would have dealt that foe a wound so bitter, cleaving the undead flesh, breaking the spell that knit his unseen sinews to his will. So, as important as Eowyn was, it was Merry's weapon that broke the spell that knit his unseen sinews to his will. There are layers here, but it was his will, controlled by Sauron, that kept the Witch King clinging to our corporeal plane. Merry's sword made the difference, so let's look at that sword. In the films, Aragorn gave the hobbits some weapons for their journey to Rivendell. Forget that. In the books, those weapons were salvaged from the barrow that the hobbits had been trapped in before Tom Bombadil rescued them. He pulled all the treasures out of that tomb, and after taking a simple brooch to give to Goldberry, he left it in a heap for any free person or bird or animal to take. And from that pile, he took four swords for hobbits, or daggers for humans. We read this. For each of the hobbits, he chose a dagger, long, leaf-shaped and keen, of marvellous workmanship, damasked with serpent forms in red and gold. They gleamed as he drew them from their black sheaths, wrought of some strange metal, light and strong, and set with many fiery stones. Whether by some virtue in these sheaths, or because of the spell that lay on the mound, the blades seemed untouched by time, unrusted, sharp, glittering in the sun. "Old knives are long enough as swords for hobbit people," he said. "Sharp blades are good to have if shire folk go walking, east, south, or far away into darkened danger." Then he told them that these blades were forged many long years ago by the men of Western Ess. They were the foes of the Dark Lord, but they were overcome by the evil king of Khandoum in the land of Angmar. "Few now remember them," Tom murmured, "yet still some go wandering, sons of forgotten kings walking in loneliness, guarding from evil things folk that are heedless." The hobbits did not understand his words, but as he spoke, they had a vision, as it were, of a great expanse of years behind them, like a vast shadowy plain over which there strode shapes of men, tall and grim with bright swords, and last came one with a star on his brow. Then the vision faded, and they were back in the sunlit world. I don't know about you, but I always get caught up in Tolkien's astonishing prose, so welcome back. The important point here is that there is no indication that Merry's weapon is any different to the others. They were all forged in the northern kingdom of Arnor in years past as a defence against the Witch King, and wights and wraiths. They are clearly all magical, given their lack of wear after centuries. Each of the hobbits got one. We know about Merry's. Sam kept his to the end as well, after leaving it behind when he thought Frodo was dead. It was later recovered by Aragorn, and kept it as a treasured heirloom. Pippin used his to kill a troll in the Battle of the Black Gate. Frodo's was shattered at the Fords of Bruinen, just outside Rivendell. The Witch King used some magic to shatter it from across the river. Perhaps he saw what it was. But before that, Frodo had it at Weathertop. You'll remember that Aragorn had led the hobbits there on a slightly circuitous route to Rivendell and then gone out on a ranging mission while the Nazgul advanced. I would drag Aragorn for that, but he more than made up for it later. The Nazgul advanced on the hobbits, who were not just seriously underpowered, but didn't really even have a concept of how to fight outside of a rather rowdy night at the Green Dragon. Frodo, not really knowing any better, put on the ring. We read this. Immediately, though everything else remained as before, dim and dark, the shapes became terribly clear. He was able to see beneath their black wrappings. There were five tall figures, two standing on the lip of the dell, three advancing. In their white faces burned keen and merciless eyes. Under their mantles were long grey robes. Upon their grey hairs were helms of silver. In their haggard hands were swords of steel. Their eyes fell on him and pierced him as they rushed towards him. Desperate, he drew his own sword, and it seemed to him that it flickered red, as if it was a firebrand. Two of the figures halted. The third was taller than the others. His hair was long and gleaming, and on his helm was a crown. In one hand he held a longsword, and in the other a knife. Both the knife and the hand that held it glowed with a pale light. He sprang forward and bore down on Frodo. At that moment, Frodo threw himself forward on the ground, and he heard himself crying aloud, "O Elbereth Gilthoniel!" At the same time, he struck at the feet of his enemy. A shrill cry rang out in the night, and he felt a pain like a dart of poisoned ice pierce his left shoulder. Even as he swooned, he caught, as though a swirling mist, a glimpse of Strider leaping out of the darkness. Before we get back onto what Frodo was doing, let's just address for a moment the unwritten question of why the Nazgul withdrew then. The hobbits were clearly no threat, and yes, Aragorn was an impressive opponent, but he didn't yet have an impressive weapon. Narsil had yet to be reforged. The short answer, let me know if you want a longer answer in a video, is a combination of the fiery brand that Aragorn held, Frodo's invocation of Elbereth, and a feeling that their job was done. The Witch King had plunged his Morgul blade into Frodo's shoulder. They just had to wait now. No one suspected Frodo would last as long as he did. Aragorn headed off again to scout out the situation. Then we read this. "Look," he cried. And stooping, he lifted from the ground a black cloak that had lain there hidden by the darkness. A foot above the lower hem, there was a slash. "This was the stroke of Frodo's sword," he said, "the only hurt that it did to his enemy, I fear, for it is unharmed, but all blades perish that pierce that dreadful king." And herein lies the answer to this video's OP. You may have missed it. Feel free to go back and have a look. But just as the Witch King plunged the blade into Frodo's shoulder, Frodo also struck at, we read, the feet of his enemy. Later, when Aragorn is tending to Frodo's wounds, they discover that the Witch King's cloak had been slashed a foot above the hem. For those less metrically inclined, a foot is about 30 centimetres from the bottom of the cloak. Frodo had slashed at the Witch King's foot, so that story checks out. How close had he got to hitting home? Pretty close, it seems. Any normal blade hitting around the ankle would have mattered little, unless it struck a lucky or unlucky tendon. But one of those daggers? Remember, Merry didn't strike a killing blow, he just thrust his dagger into the back of the Witch King's knee. The important thing with those blades seems not to be about which organs are struck, but whether it's hit home. That is what provokes this. No other blade, not though mightier hands had wielded it, would have dealt that foe a wound so bitter, cleaving the undead flesh, breaking the spell that knit his unseen sinews to his will. The Numenorean descendants of Arnor had forged weapons deadly to the Witch King, and when all hope was lost, left them in the tomb of their prince, apparently the last prince of Cardolan. Normally, I would focus now on how Frodo nearly managed to kill the Witch King with one of those blades. Seriously, there is a good chance that he was mere inches or centimetres from what Merry achieved much later in the story. Frodo struck at the Witch King's foot, and we see a tear in the cloak near that foot. It was close. But whenever Tolkien talks about these blades, he doesn't focus on the actions of their late Third Age users. He instead reminds us of when they were forged. They were forged by the remaining people of the Kingdom of Arnor, who retreated to Cardolan. Those people knew the last vestiges of the magical technology of Numenor and poured that into their weapons crafting. It was their last best hope against the Witch King. Maybe one lucky strike could take him down. Ultimately, They never got to use those blades against the Witch King, who had caused their kingdom so much torment in their lifetime. And let's be clear that the Witch King had caused so much torment to those northern people. Almost everyone they ever knew was destroyed indirectly or directly by the Witch King. But years and years later, those blades could still cause damage. The hobbits knew nothing of all that history, even though Tom Bombadil had told them some of it. There's no indication that Merry even thought once about whether he was wielding the right sword to damage the Witch King. He was just trying to protect Eowyn and used whatever was at hand. Which probably tells you a lot about the role of the hobbits in this story, doing the right thing and often not understanding the bigger picture. That's part of why we love them. But to return to Frodo on Weathertop, yes, he could have damaged the Witch King. He could have broken the spell that knit the Witch King's sinews to his will. Like Merry, he wouldn't have known it. Perhaps that would have been enough. Surely Aragorn would have been on hand to land the killing blow if necessary. But would that have been enough? Glorfindel's word of prophecy, or perhaps just a bit of foresight, was that not by the hand of man will he fall. Tolkien never truly set out how predestined the nature of his subcreation was. The implication is that it mirrored the very Catholic nature of Tolkien's own faith, which was fluid but certain. So, probably, in his mind, Merry and Eowyn were always going to kill the Witch King, and Frodo, unnoticed by almost everyone, very, very nearly killed him months earlier. But still, the lion's share of the praise should go to those unnamed smiths who forged the wraith-killing blades all those years ago. They died not knowing that their life's work would, ultimately, centuries after their own deaths, still bear fruit. I think Tolkien would want us to pause for a moment to acknowledge them. Sometimes, the fruits of our labour are not known in our own lifetimes. Sometimes we work tireless hours to water a tree that we will not see bloom. Tolkien here honours that work. We may not know the names of those Cartelan smiths, but they saved many lives, many, many years after their own deaths. May we have a similar impact centuries after our own deaths. If you'd like to see more Lord of the Rings videos, please click on the link on the left of your screen. Or if you'd like to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.